May it please the Court. Thank you, Counsel. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Joanna Christensen, and I represent the appellant, Gail Rockeye, in this matter. We have raised three issues on appeal today, the first being the government's breach of the plea agreement, and then also an issue about Mr. Rockeye's property being returned, and then a credit on his sentence issue. I'll start with the breach plea agreement issue. The government breached the plea agreement in this case in three manners. First, the government agreed not to object or oppose the return of Mr. Rockeye's property held by state and local law enforcement agencies. Second is the government agreed to recommend a 60-month sentence. And the third is the government agreed to recommend the amount of loss was limited to the amounts in the indictment, superseding indictment.
So let's go to that first one, because the plea agreement only demanded that the government not openly oppose a request for the return of property that was currently held in the custody of state and local authorities. So doesn't that, by its term, anticipate state and local proceedings rather than federal ones?
I think that it looks like that could be it, but in this case, the complex nature of this case, the provision is the United States agrees not to impose any request. Mr. Rockeye did request.
But it doesn't say that.
I'm sorry?
It doesn't say that.
It says any request.
It says currently held in the custody of state and local authorities.
Right. But the government agrees not to impose any request for the return of any of his property held in the custody of the state and local authorities. So he did request it from the state and local authorities, and what happened was they said, we can't give it to you because the federal government, the United States attorney, has to release it because it's being held for federal prosecution. That then becomes perhaps something that was not considered when the agreement was entered into, but it does then become a federal issue because the government is holding the property or causing someone to hold the property.
Which, that's not what the United States attorney is saying. It's what some state official is saying, perhaps incorrectly.
That could be.
The federal district judge says, look, if the state official is making a mistake, go complain to the state official. Mm-hmm. You don't complain to a federal court about the U.S. attorney when a state official makes a mistake.
Well, and believe me, Mr. Rockeye has continued to complain to the state authorities about this. And
is there any indication that the United States attorney has ever filed any document or otherwise opposed the release of the property?
Well, the government has filed something after Mr. Rockeye filed his request saying first, well, that Mr. Rockeye couldn't file it because it was pro se, and I can address that later if the court wishes. Second, that Mr. Rockeye may not be entitled to the return of the property, and third, that the court didn't have jurisdiction.
Has the government filed in the state proceeding anything opposing the return of the property? That's what this deal is about.
Not that I'm
Has
not.
It done that? No.
Not in the state proceeding. No. No. But we believe the interpretation is broader than that.
Look, you could have negotiated for a promise that the government will affirmatively assist him in getting the property back. That wasn't the deal.
Right.
The deal was no opposition. Right? You tell us there's no opposition. So let's move on to something else.
Okay, Your Honor. I'll move on to the second breach, and that's the failure to recommend a 60-month sentence. And the government did recommend a 60-month sentence. It says that several times. However, the government...
Right, because that's why I have such a problem with that argument. The government keeps saying that's the agreed amount, 60 months, so... I mean, just because the government makes reference to his extensive criminal record doesn't mean there's a violation.
It's a fine line. It goes above and beyond what the 60-month recommendation was. The reason the 60 months was a recommendation was because of Mr. Rockeye's admittedly extensive criminal history.
Exactly. 60-month is an above-guideline sentence. Mm-hmm. How is the prosecutor going to justify the agreed recommendation, 60 months?
Right.
Without telling the district judge that the defendant is worse than the norm.
Well, and
that's how you justify.
And it's worse than the norm.
Sentence.
And then it goes, the government goes a step further by comparing him to a career offender, which would mandate a sentence near the top of the range or top of the statutory maximum.
But the reason
years.
The government even got into it is because of how the court recapped what the guidelines levels were, and made the comment about, you know, his extensive record and the extraordinary criminal history, and so he wanted to hear from government's counsel, and all the government did was agree with the court essentially about his long criminal history and basically said he would be a career offender, and then said, and that's why I urge the court to accept the recommendation. I mean, essentially, that's why we think this is a joint recommendation of 60 months, which, of course, was above the...
The government introduced the concept of being a career offender, which would launch his sentence beyond the 60 months. The way the government, and I assume the defense, arrived at 60 months was this idea of upward departing for each three criminal history points. And that would get him to a range where 60 months is included. Above and beyond is the career offender comparison that gets you much beyond 60 months. In fact, it would get you to 120 months. And making that comparison, which the district court then latched onto quite strongly, is the above and beyond the making the recommendation in this case. And we believe that that was a breach of the plea agreement to do so. The government argues, of course, that it was harmless error. And like I said, the district court relied heavily on that career offender designation, not just Mr. Rockeye's criminal history, which was significant and rightfully relied on, but also this designation of a career offender. I will, unless the court has questions about that, I'll move on to the property issue again, I guess, come back to.
So let me just go back for a minute, just looking sure. at the government's language. The government says, I would urge the court to accept the recommendation. So he doesn't say, no, this is our recommendation and this is what we're putting before the court. He's urging the court to do it.
And this court has found, even when a recommendation is made, I believe it was the Diaz case where the government came and recommended 24 months when the recommendation was supposed to be 18, came back and corrected it and says, oh, I urge the court to, probably didn't use the same language, but I'm recommending the 18 months, although something else would be appropriate. And that's a similar type of case. The government, we're not denying that the government said, I recommend 60 months in this case. That's clearly in the record. But to go above and beyond to induce the court to give a higher sentence is the breach in this matter. The property issue comes back in a different way in the district court's failure to grant a hearing. We talked a little bit about that. The issue about Mr. Rockeye filing these motions pro se is a sticky issue in this case because Mr. Rockeye was allowed to file by the district court pro se motions throughout the entire proceedings in this case. Rightly or wrongly, he was still allowed to do that. In fact, at one point, the government filed a letter for him in front of the district court that was written pro se. The reason he's filing these motions pro se is because he was pro se in the state case and trying to get his property back to defend himself in that state case. So the pro se filing should be construed liberally and should be considered a Rule 41G motion. And there are factual disputes here. The government says he's not entitled to the property. They say he is entitled to the property. He may be entitled to the property. He may still have the property. In fact, the government thinks now that he's entitled to the property and they're the ones to take care of that because they took care of making sure he got some of that property back after this my opening brief was filed. So the government in some ways has shown that they believe that, one, they have the obligation to make sure that happens, and two, they actually did it after the brief was filed. However, the issues still remain is whether Mr. Rockeye has received all of his property from these proceedings. The government has provided information that some of the property has been destroyed or returned to Mr. Rockeye's family. However, he requested property returned from 9 searches, 6 locations, 4 vehicles, and 3 agencies, and there is nowhere near the accounting for that property, which was being held at the behest of the government, has all been returned to him or not. So the motion still has outstanding factual issues. an issue can be whether the government, a factual issue is whether the government possesses the property. And there are some, there was one computer that was actually possessed by an agent, but the rest would be constructive possession that was being possessed by the state on the behest of the government.
When you say possessed by an agent, you don't mean that the agent is, like, using it, do you?
No. Okay. I believe the agent had it to do, and I was not trial counsel, so not exactly. I believe the agent had it to do investigation. It was a computer, probably investigation for the vehicle theft and check issues. And my understanding is that that particular computer, there were several computers, but that particular one, I can't say that for sure. It may have been the one that was sold eventually on propertyroom.com. So, and that, you know, may have been taken care of as well. But there are still questions that require a factual evidentiary hearing in this case. And before I go into my rebuttal time, I'll mention the credit for time served issue. And this is a plain error issue. We admit that. And the government is correct that it does not fall under the parameters of 5G 1.3. However, as we all know, those guidelines are advisory, and the district court could use discretion to give him credit for the 8 months that he served.
Usually, if you want a judge to exercise discretion in a particular way, you ask the judge.
Yes, Your Honor.
It's very hard to see how you can say a judge committed plain error in not exercising discretion in a particular way when the judge was never asked.
It is a difficult argument to make, Your Honor.
It's impossible.
And perhaps the government has...
Plain error occurs when a district judge doesn't follow some legal rule. That I understand. But I've never seen any opinion saying that a judge committed plain error in not exercising discretion in a particular way when he was never asked to exercise discretion in that way.
It would be unusual, Your Honor. You're correct.
Do you know of any case...
No, I do not.
...where that's been held? No, and I don't either. Well, that suggests that the right word is impossible.
Correct. I will save the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Rumbelow.
Good morning, Your Honors. Rita Rumbelow for the United States. I would start my argument today, first of all, discussing the issue of the government's alleged violation of the plea agreement over this 60-month sentence. Judge Williams correctly noted that at sentencing, the government urged the district court to accept the joint recommendation of 60 months.
Is that you urging?
Pardon me?
Was that you urging?
I did not represent the government below. No. It was my colleague. But what my colleague did, the government just simply echoed language that was contained within the pre-sentence investigation report. The language from the pre-sentence investigation report revealed that other jurisdictions called him a career criminal. That wasn't the government's first use of that term ever in these proceedings. That was the characterization of Mr. Rockeye in the pre-sentence investigation report. And I think what's very, very important to note from this record is that but for the joint recommendation of 60 months, the district court judge wanted to sentence Mr. Rockeye to 120 months. And he only tempered his sentence because of the joint recommendation. So then he split the baby and gave him a 90-month sentence. So there was no breach of the plea agreement as it relates.
I'm puzzled by that idiom. Then he split the baby. The whole point about the Solomon story was that the wise king did not split the baby. Mm-hmm. You can't praise somebody as wise by saying he chopped the baby in half.
No.
That's murder.
Sorry. I'm just explaining how the district court ended up with a 90-month sentence. He found somebody in the halfway point. As it relates to paragraph 6 of the plea agreement, it is very clear that the United States agreed not to impose any request by Rockeye for the return of property currently held in the custody of the state or local authorities. At the time this plea agreement was entered into, the parties understood the property was in the custody of state and local authorities. And when the government indicated it would not oppose any request by Rockeye, that cannot be meant to include any pro se request filed by him. The district court had previously denied pro se requests filed on behalf of the defendant, and I think that is like docket number 33 and 57. He had already been told twice. He's represented by counsel. Motions to the court must proceed through counsel. And so, and Mr. Rockeye filed his latest motion for return of property pro se between the plea hearing and the sentencing hearing. And in fact, the district court judge denied his motion the day before the sentencing hearing. And at sentencing, you know, asked Mr. Rockeye, you know, did you read the pre-sentence? And they took a 30-minute break to read the addendum. And Mr. Rockeye never objected to the district court's order through counsel or at any time. So clearly the intent set forth in paragraph 6 is that everybody understood the property was in the custody of the state and local authorities. There was a time subsequently to the sentencing and all the other proceedings where some property was allegedly under the constructive possession of the federal government, and that was immediately returned to Mr. Rockeye. Mr. Rockeye's wife was sent repeated notices to retrieve the property from the local police departments, and it is the government's understanding that she did do that. So there is not any basis to find that the government breached the plea agreement as it relates to the return of the property or that there is a need for an evidentiary hearing. Again, Mr. Rockeye was told many times to not file pro se motions, and as another interesting thing from the pre-sentence investigation report is that it's Mr. Rockeye's wife herself who indicated that Mr. Rockeye just likes to cause trouble for the judicial system and that he takes great pleasure in that. So when he repeatedly was doing something the court told him not to do by filing pro se motions, it was not a breach of the plea agreement for the government to responsibly reply and say a pro se motion should not be considered by the court. As it relates to the 5G1.3B argument, Judge Easterbrook wisely noted, it's impossible. They never asked the district court for a concurrent sentence, and as set forth in the government's brief, they haven't even met the standard for the 8-month credit. Under not concurrent, the credit of the 8 months under 5G1.3B. And then finally, as to the loss amount, again, they did not object below. It did not increase his base offense level. And it was a puzzling argument because when they argue about the loss amount, the district court did correctly calculate the advisory guideline range below, but even assuming for sake of argument that the loss amount should have been $63,000, even if that's true, they still stipulated to a sentence of 60 months, which would have been above a guideline range dealing with the $63,000 loss. So, again, although the government recognizes that the guidelines must be correctly calculated, the loss amount is really somewhat irrelevant here because of his joint stipulation to a sentence of 60 months. Unless the court has any further questions, other than the there's one little correction that needs to be made to the judgment, as we pointed out in our brief, but we ask that you affirm the judgment conviction of the district court otherwise. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thanks, counsel. Anything further, Ms. Christensen?
About the characterization as a career offender, it was in the plea agreement that I believe Minnesota had characterized him as that. The government knows that the career offender designation in federal court means something beyond just a characterization of someone who commits crimes for a long period of time. And by in doing that, that's the inducement for 120 months. And the judge did split the sentence between the recommendation and the government's true recommendation, which was 120 months, perhaps to protect an appeal, and that obviously did not work. But other than that, there was not justification for the 90 months other than it was halfway in between the recommendation and what the government insinuated would be appropriate of 120 months. Unless the court has any further questions, I will ask the court to reverse and remand this matter.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.